There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's BudPod 90. Is 90 anything?
90 is the lowest mark possible I would allow myself growing up at school.
In what subject?
Anything, really. I mean, I think I would allow myself a lower mark for Chinese just because Chinese was so hard.
Yeah.
But maths would have to be a 90 for, you know, and yeah, I think at GCSE I gave myself slack for history.
Why? Because it's essays.
Because I wasn't very good at it, and I guess I wasn't as interested. I wasn't as interested in it as the others, and I felt it was sort of an add-on subject to what I knew was going to be a science maths heavy academic life.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd already accepted that you were Captain Numbers from now on.
Yeah. Mathatine. I was Mathatine.
You were Mathatine. I did like
Calcatine, maybe I don't know.
I mean this is not particularly an amusing piece of information, but you did a very impressive thing, I think, Phil, which is you educated yourself in the ways of maths and numbers and things, science.
Science.
And then as a sort of guy in his 20s, I remember when you, it was like a particular decision you made where you were like, I'm going to read all the books now, I think.
Yeah, I didn't read books for myself until after university because I didn't need it. I remember our engineering degree, we didn't need books. I remember I borrowed one book from the library, and one of the older engineers just went, put it back. Like, it's not what we were supposed to do. We didn't read books. We were just given the sheets and we worked it out. I graduated with great gaps in my knowledge, and history is one of them. So I got a few, you know, Guns, Germs, and Steel. Prisoners of Geography is one I read recently. It's really good. I think I started with Gombrich's A Brief History of the World, which he wrote for children. In the 20s, I think he was.
Yeah.
He's a German art historian. He wrote The History of Art, which is the go-to art history book. And then the German government, I can't remember when, but just went.
Ideally, not.
We want a history book.
Ideally, not in the late 30s. We need a history book.
Oh, I can't remember when it was. I think it might have been just before, maybe.
If it has this reputation, it'll be Weimar.
Yeah. But, I mean, the ironic thing is he's a real humanist, and it really comes through in the writing that he's, you know, a real humanist. But he taught himself history over, he was given like, you know, 2 months to write this book. So, and he didn't really know any history. So he just read up, he just spent every day in the library and condensed it all and then wrote this book.
Yeah.
And even though it was intended really for children, it's a really great overview of world history. Which I recommend. Yeah. Anyway, that's my history. That's my history lesson.
I really enjoyed that period because I'm a big old humanities nerd, and it was like a confirmation that it's interesting because a science man had come, and you were reading it and going like, I can't believe that, you know, whatever thing happened, and I'd be like, yes, it's mental, isn't it? Like, just getting really into it. It'd be the equivalent of if I started getting really into, like, I'm trying to think of something. Like, I'm trying to think of if I even know enough about engineering to, I don't know, force quickly, equations?
Well, that's the thing. You can't, yeah. Yeah, the thing about maths is just, like, and engineering, it's about practice. You can't really just pick up a book and then go, like, Neo, I know maths now. It's just, like... You just have to practice it. I've just had a quick Google. It's called A Little History of the World by E.H. Gombrich and is written madly in 1935 in Vienna.
Ooh, okay, that's close. That's close. It's in Vienna, though.
Spicy stuff. Spicy stuff.
The I remember thinking. do you ever get that feeling of like FOMO, even though it's something you didn't want to do and couldn't do?
Is this about Nazi Germany?
Yeah, it's just about the Anschluss, Phil. I just love uniting countries.
Imagine getting. Do you reckon anyone got FOMO if they like missed a rally or something? I bet they did. Someone definitely did.
Oh, definitely. They were so into it. That's the lie we all get told is that, like, oh, no, it was a big trick and everyone fell for it. It's like, no, loads of them totally knew what it was about. And they would have been like, oh, I can't believe I missed it. Was Hitler there? Was he there? Was he late? He's always late. It's like Guns N' Roses, you know. They would have been super into it. He was often late. He kind of pioneered that.
Yeah, there's a real there's an interesting streak among sort of totalitarians of laziness.
No, it was a PR thing. It's like Axl Rose. It may have been sincere, but they did it in the knowledge that it riled the crowd up. It made everyone go mental. It made it seem more like some kind of event than just some political speech. It was to make everyone impatient and angry.
I heard something about, like, I mean, Hitler didn't really wake up very early most of the time. He liked to lie in.
Oh, it also depends if we're talking about heavily medicated era Hitler or not.
Okay.
I'm talking.
It's like talking about Elvis, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. People going, no, Elvis was fat. Yeah. 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 I mean pre-war Hitler, like campaigning Hitler, Donald Trump era, currently Hitler.
Right. Okay. Yeah, sure.
As opposed to he's done it and he's in a bunker and he's going gavash, gavash, and pointing at a map, you know. That's too late. He's done. He's done it then. He's figured it out.
I still need to watch Downfall.
Downfall's
great. I've
seen
the Downfall memes maybe 20,000 times, but I've never actually seen Downfall the film.
It's an amazing film. It's the first time Hitler was portrayed by a German, I think.
Interesting. That's an interesting point.
Very controversial. The
as he would have wanted, of course.
Well, that's why it was controversial. I would have, yeah, just a colorblind casting for Hitler. But in terms of the FOMO thing, what I meant was, like, do you ever read about, like, I'll just give you what it reminded me of, because you're talking about how math is about practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading about, every now and then you'll hear about in the news, or you'll read about like a brilliant young mathematician has solved the Krumpelstinks theorem.
Yeah.
And they're always like under 30.
I've not kept tally of their ages.
I've read, basically, I looked into it, and apparently, like, the vast majority of solving these incredibly complex theorems is done by people in their teens and 20s, people on masters or PhD programs.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
They need a young brain.
I think, right.
And they joke that it's a bit like athletics, that if you're older than a certain age, like, you're not going to solve any of these generational equation problems, like these huge theorems. You're kind of done if you're like 35 and trying to do it. Your brain's too dusty now.
Interesting, yeah. It's got too many presuppositions and presumptions.
Yeah, you've let it go all creaky. And I read that and I was like, no.
Why? Because in the back of your mind, you thought you might be able to solve Fermat or whatever. I think Fermat is solved now, but
I think someone did solve Fermat.
Did you think at some point you might give it a go?
Yeah, well, maybe as a retirement project. I just remember, like, reading that and thinking, well, until I knew this, I knew that the likelihood of me being able to solve anything complex and mathematical was approaching zero. But now it is zero. So it was turning something into certainty,
yeah,
that made me go, oh, well, that's that's 100% not possible now then.
I wonder if I can teach you to integrate, like My Fair Lady or something. I'll do a bet. I'll do a bet with a guy in a top hat.
No, you have to do a bet with like another Asian guy. You can teach a white humanities graduate to integrate.
But you know, people don't bet each other enough these days. But there used to be a time, I swear there was a century where every day two men would bet each other that one couldn't do a thing.
Yeah.
And then they go off and do it. We need to do that more now.
We should start betting
wages.
More, yeah.
Gone is the day of the wager. People bet now, sure, but on sports and political outcomes, but there aren't enough wages anymore.
Do you know what I found out the other day? You know bookies and stuff? Like if you bet on the election or on a sports game?
Yeah.
They technically speaking, they have no legal obligation to pay out.
Oh.
they have like a kind of presumption that they're going to pay out, which does carry some legal weight. And there's lots of scenarios where they should, but there's also loads and loads of scenarios where they just go, no.
Right. And I guess I just have to weigh it against the damage to their image, mm-hmm. their reputation.
Yeah, I was amazed. I was absolutely astonished. But I remember there's a book of like there's a book of like crazy wages from like the Victorian era, the height of wagery, and two guys in a gentleman's club bet each other like £100, which back then was loads. Which of two raindrops would hit the bottom of a windowsill first because they were that bored?
Oh my god!
Yeah, we could do that kind of thing. We could bring that back. What should we wager on? We could do a bud pod wager.
There was that. There's a story of a guy. I think he's in America in the Wild West or whatever. I don't know. But he'd go around doing wages and making money. He'd always win the wages, and because they were sort of cleverly designed for him to win. And one was predicting which sugar cube a fly would land on, and he would think about it with his finger on his lip, and then. And he touched the sugar cube that he predicted the fly would land on, and without fail the fly would go zip, and it would land on the sugar cube he'd selected. And he made loads of money doing this. But all he was doing was he was wetting his finger, and then wetting the sugar cube, which released some kind of smell, or you know,
well,
and the fly would follow it and suck up this sugar.
Well, spit digests, the enzymes in spit digest sugar primarily. So that'll be what that is.
Amylase.
Yes, it'll make it all stinky like sugar smell. The fly will go, oh, and like a big cartoon pie. With the finger made of steam.
Well, yes, and he'll float up in the air with his arms hanging down and like float over to the... Yeah,
exactly. Well, what should we wager on if we're going to do a wager? Let's do a bud pod wager. What? It's hard to do without when it's literally illegal to hang out with people.
Well, this is the thing. There's not very much, you know. It's not really COVID secure to be sort of training street urchins in the arts of dining etiquette or whatever. So we're
training street urchins.
We're gonna have to think of something. Huh?
I don't know. Like training street urchins to like wash their hands and deliver vaccine doses and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I guess we could. I mean, there was a time we could have bet on a vaccine. Which vaccine was going to get to its phase 3 trials first?
Which which vaccine causes the zombie virus? Maybe that could be good.
Yeah, that'd be a fun wager. But then. If, you know, once we hit a zombie apocalypse, I'm not sure how much money it'll be worth.
Yeah, we'd have to wager in sort of fresh eggs or bullets or something.
Yes, 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 yes.
Did you ever, which zombie apocalypse would you prefer to deal with? The sprinting ones or the slow ones that are a bit magical?
Oh, the slow ones, obviously, easy.
But here's my, it's an easy question until you remember that the slow ones are kind of magical.
So this is the original voodoo-style-y zombie?
Well, like, the fast ones are essentially people with a disease, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the slow ones, they can keep moving their arm even when it is a skeleton arm.
Oh, okay. I see, I see, I see. But I think them being slow, it is such an advantage for us, the survivor, to escape them. And I mean, which just means we have to burn them, right? It means we probably can't bludgeon them to death in the head, but we just have to burn them.
I think smashing in the head works, but or just like sort of chopping them up generally. But yeah, you can't stab them or anything.
But you just said that if the arm comes off, that it's still alive. So chopping them up doesn't work.
Oh no, it does. But then, like, if you watch movies that are based around that type of zombie, the arm's going like, and they go, and they kick it off into a corner.
Yeah, and there's not very much a lone arm can do, can it?
Oh, many's the man who said such a thing, Phil, and lived to regret it.
Famous last words. Famous last words.
Who do you think invented wanking? A lone arm. Should we look at some emails?
Yes.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ring letters,
emails,
phone
calls, correspondence.
I don't know what it is about Gmail, but there's a thing where if the emails are old enough, it just decides to forget what the images attached are.
Oh, it's just to free up space, isn't it?
I guess, but then let me look at them. It's just going, no, we don't know that anymore. I mean, these are only from
Gmail. Oh, really? You can't even retrieve them?
No, it won't load them. That's what I mean.
Oh, I see.
It just goes, no, can't do that. Something went wrong. Try again later. So patronizing. Fix it then. Something went wrong. What went wrong? Oh, I'll try again later. Later? So whatever went wrong is just fixed by just what? Wait, going and having a cup of tea, is it? Ridiculous
later.
Suggestion. Later? I want it now.
The adage is, the definition of madness is repeating an action and expecting a different result.
Yes.
But in the age of computing, repeating an action is a completely valid approach to a problem. Because there are so many variables at play in modern computing that by repeat, you know, turning something off and on, classic, or just closing something, opening again, or just hitting a button again, it can fix it. So I think, in a way, computers are the end of that definition of madness. And maybe computers are the end of madness completely. Maybe that is why madness is now a reasonable approach to life, because computers have taken the definition of madness and made it valid. And made it a valid approach to life.
They've poisoned the way, the causality of the universe.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Right. I saw I can't remember what country it is, but it is something... Or maybe it's the Solomon Islands. They've just banned Facebook.
Oh, thank God.
In the name of national unity.
Do you mean they cut it in half if it's the Solomon Island?
Yeah. They said, we're going to cut Mark Zuckerberg in half. And he went, okay. You can ban it. They've banned... I think it's the Solomon Islands. The parliament was like, we're going to ban Facebook in the name of national unity, which might be the excuse of a dictatorship. I haven't looked into it, but it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. I think we should do the same.
There's a strong stopped clock quality to dictatorships. Sometimes, yeah. You know, they get something very right.
Yeah, they're able to just push through annoying or loud or difficult things like highways or banning Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, well, good luck to the Solomon Islands with Instagram and Twitter. So, we have an email from Matt the Splat, too. He's emailed us before. I think you might have called him Matt the Splat.
Yes, I think I remember Matt the Splat.
So this email is Matt the Splat 2, the Borneo connection.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Consider my interest piqued.
He says, Dear Wangostura Bitters.
Yes, I like it a lot. And I'm quite bitter.
And Pierre 404.
Like Error 404.
Mm-hmm. He says, I'm so glad that you both enjoyed Dubai-aria.
Oh, yeah.
As did the wonderful Glenn Moore. That's how long it's been since we heard from Matt the Splat. Although this email was
Matt the Splat is very...
as well.
Yeah. Matt the Splat's very talented at his... what is it called, combining two words?
Portmanteau.
A portmanteau! That's it.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's so glad we enjoyed Dubai-aria. Hearing Pierre's dulcet baritone say the words I wrote aloud, especially hot bum piss, has undoubtedly been the height of my lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine too.
I thought I would share two poo stories from my time in Borneo, given Phil's former residence and Kinabalu show.
Oh, yes, great. I've done many a diarrhea in Borneo myself. Too many to count. Too many to retell, really. Can't which to pick.
He says, so these are his two poo stories from Borneo. The first is short and sweet and involves a monkey. I like that. That sounds like a pickup line. Hey, baby, you want
to
have a
come back
time?
To my place? It's short and sweet and... involves a monkey.
Let's just say it's short, sweet, and involves a monkey. So he says, the first is short and sweet and involves a monkey. The second is arguably the worst day of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Strong stuff. Okay.
Let's start with the monkey. As we all should. For part of my trip... I volunteered at Sepilok Orangutan Sanctuary.
Wow! No way! What a small world.
Do you know that Orangutan Sanctuary?
Yes, Sepilok is in Sandakan. I think it is. In Sabah, and it's the premier orangutan sanctuary in the region, if not the world.
Oh wow! Okay, so it's the orangutan Hilton.
It really is. I think that's a place where... I can never remember if my mother saw this or she just told me the story of a man who... just some asshole guy who kept bothering the orangutans, kept throwing stuff at them, shouting at them. And eventually this orangutan had enough and just sort of calmly swung down to the platform where he was stood and just reached over and just bit him in the face.
And fair enough. Like,
it just went, nope, swing. Ah!
Just a little bite to go away. That's so funny. So this is a premier orangutan hotel where orangutans can relax and be themselves.
They can be the orangutans they'd always meant to be.
Anyway, so He says, for part of my trip, I volunteered at Sepilok Orangutan Sanctuary. Not as a monkey cuddler, sadly, but instead I helped to construct a bridge to a new observation area. This meant long days.
To get your face bitten on.
Well, that's it. Get your face in biting distance, baby. This meant long days of hard work in close proximity to the apes themselves, who would often try and steal your lunch. Bullies, bullies. The staff loo was essentially a shed, so I would often sneak off to the tourist center for a good old-fashioned luxury crap. Fair enough.
Ooh, enjoy. Treat yourself.
The far cubicle had a small rectangular window that could open a crack, for when you're opening your crack.
very good.
Presumably to let out the stench of turds in 90-degree humidity. God, it must hang in the air in that level of humidity.
Oh, it really does. It really gives structure to your stinks. It really gives every
weight.
Smell a backbone. Yeah. Heftiness.
Backbone. That is horrid, yeah. Like farting in the shower, but forever. One afternoon, I snuck away from the construction site to clear myself out and settle down in the windowed cubicle with nary a care to the world. They say that if you gaze into the eyes of an ape, you can see the intelligence and the very soul of humanity. Well,
yeah.
As it turns out, you can also see disgust. Which I learned when, feeling like I was being watched, I looked up and saw an enormous orange creature through the window watching me shit.
Wow, wow! What an experience! That's amazing.
The tourist center was on the edge of the park, which itself was on the edge of the rainforest. The orangutans at the park, once old enough to be released into the wild, would usually stay relatively close to the sanctuary so they could come back for food. One such orangutan was in one of the trees nearby, peering in at me. God, can you imagine?
What's he doing in there? Just orangutan, just...
Why is he doing it into that bowl?
What a creep. What a weirdo.
Yeah.
Why don't you just shit into his hand like a normal guy?
That's a water bowl, for God's sake. We stared at each other for a few long seconds, his distinctive plate-shaped face flecked with sadness and anger for having to see this, and my mouth and anus agape. Being walked in on by a person while having... being walked in on by a person while having a poo is demeaning, but being watched by an orangutan feels abhorrent. I have never felt so small or insignificant as I did that moment, a moment I shared with an endangered and majestic beast.
It must be like... It must feel like nature itself has caught you. Your mother nature, Gaia herself, has caught you doing a shit.
Yeah, and it must feel a bit like an orangutan watching you do a shit is the mother nature version of that fake advert where the Native American has a single tear when they litter. The orangutan's like, why would you do this? This is awful.
But I mean, these are also... I wonder if orangutans... do they throw poo as sort of missiles? Maybe this orangutan was just disgusted at Matt the Splat's waste of good ammunition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Also, did you know the Native American in that classic advert where he cries a single tear is I think he's a Sicilian guy.
Oh, really?
They didn't even hire a fucking real Native American. They were just like, no, get an Italian.
That's why he's crying in the advert. He's like, I'm not even Native American. I'm not even a Native American.
They got an Italian cockney to do it.
I'm not a Native American at all. This is unbelievable.
Why would you throw something, a bit of litter, on the ground when you could put it in a bin, innit?
No, don't. That takes bloody hundreds of years to decompose. What are you doing? He's not even bothered to cry to pull that bag.
So he says he felt very judged. That being said, later that day, the very same orangutan with a plate-shaped face climbed into the back of a flatbed truck and drank some washer fluid. So who's laughing now? And then he says,
cleanest
just to be
clear, bowels in the junction, the jungle.
Yeah, exactly. Absolute bubbles. They call them bubbles now. just to be clear, he says it didn't die. So that's good.
That's good. I mean, it says a lot about my relationship with animals that I couldn't, I didn't care. I didn't care either way.
You had no questions. You were happy for it to be dead.
Or alive. I want to specify. I am not malicious. I'm apathetic towards animals.
Yes, you nothing them.
Yes.
Yes, okay. That... Yeah, that will not please the animal people. Either way, interestingly, they won't be happy with ambivalence.
Yeah.
I'm
same
not
way
ambivalent.
Fundamentalists feel about atheists. You are not ambivalent.
No, I like certain animals.
Which ones?
I like orangutans.
Sure.
I like dogs.
Yeah.
I like humans, Phil.
I turned on the news today and, I wanted to be news, but it was some story about a veteran army dog that had a medal. And I almost said out loud, for God's sake. And they, it was just this dog that it had saved a bunch of people in Afghanistan. And everyone's going, it's an amazing dog. It's really sacrificed a lot, as you can see from his prosthetic leg. And I was just like, I don't. You're pathetic! So what? Who cares? Pathetic. Grow up.
You've got such a Well, actually, that's not fair. I was going to say you've got such like a developing country attitude to animals. But I think that there's all sorts of like pro-animal, thank you for being awesome festivals in like India and stuff. Maybe you just, like, what is your attitude? Is it just Chinese or what?
I don't know what it is. I am in general, I'm irritated by anyone's enthusiasm about anything.
Yes, and okay, so that's a good starting point, isn't it, to be annoyed by the oogly googly animals' enthusiasm.
Yeah, I don't like, yeah, I mean, the thing about it, I don't like anyone, I don't really enjoy other people who are having a good time in any sense. So, like, if I'm out on the street and there's a bunch of people going, ah, yeah, just having a good time, I hate them so much. And I think maybe that extends to, like, people who just are made happy by their pets. I'm just irritated by it. I've told you before that I find the happiness of others a direct insult at me.
Yes, because you immediately have to figure out why you're not as happy, right?
I think that's it.
It forces you to ask a tough question of yourself.
A difficult question I don't want to answer.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I get that with some... I completely see your point of view with certain animals. That's why I'm not ambivalent. I'm like pro or anti, or like I have an opinion on them. There's some animals people are like, no, and I'm like, that just looks like a bug. That's nothing.
I there's a scale, of course, for dogs. I mean, if I encounter a very smart, calm dog, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan, I have to say. If it's like got kind eyes and it isn't go blah 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 blah, if it's not doing that, I'm on side. But if it's like a yappy little piece of shit, I honestly want to crush its skull. Like if it's a yappy little scratchy chihuahua kind of thing, I just want to stomp on its head. It's like a rat to me. I have no automatic sentiment or attraction to it. Dog, just for being a dog. It has to prove itself on its own merit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the dog will earn it on a case-by-case basis, I suppose. Some dogs with big eyes, to me, look like flies. Looks like you've got a leash on a big fly.
I just see Ren from Ren and Stimpy. Or is it Stimpy?
Yes. Yes.
I just see a little kind of thing with that kind of voice. I just want to...
Which goes some way to explain the unnatural levels of aggression directed at Ren from Ren and Stimpy in the show. That's actually quite realistic now. So, just Matt's second tale, which he says was the worst day of his life.
Okay.
He says, my second tale takes place deep in the heart of the Sabah rainforest, where a group of intrepid explorers and I were trekking under the auspices of our local guides, Lex and Gilbert.
Yeah, good Sabahan names. Just like good, like, Old Testament fucking names.
Yes. After well over a week, we had a particularly tough day's trek across hilly terrain, and we were in almost unbearable humidity. 4 hours in, I was starting to wonder if I'd ever stop sweating, and all I could think about was putting one foot in front of the other, and suddenly I was pulled from my daze. I heard buzzing.
Oh. Mm. Bees.
I looked to my left, and I saw a hornet the size of my thumb hovering next to my face.
Yuck. Yes, 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 yes.
Then I felt the first sting. It was the back of my head.
That'll teach you to go in the rainforest. Teach you to go in the rainforest.
Fuck the rainforest in terms of visiting it. Keep it growing. Fuck I'm not coming.
Yes, yes, yes. It can make my air, but I'm not going there. That's my slogan.
That's the Fu Wang rainforest slogan.
Yeah. It can make my air, but I'm not going there.
Yeah. It was on the back of my head, he says, the sting. It was one of the worst pains I've ever felt in my life.
Ugh.
Over the next few seconds, everyone in the group started shouting, oh, fuck, or Jesus Christ. As it turned out, one of our party had put her foot through a massive hornet's nest.
No!
The air around us was filled with massive, furious dickheads.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, yeah, great, great.
Ugh. Whose sole purpose in life was to sting the ever-loving shit out of us. At this point, Gilbert shouted, run for your lives!
When the local guide is freaking out, that's when you know you should be scared.
Run for your lives!
He says a phrase that I had assumed was only used in campy disaster movies, and we all ran off in different directions screaming. That's great, isn't it, to actually hear that phrase in life.
Run for your lives.
Run for your lives!
As if it's like it's urgent enough that you're saying run, but it's not so urgent that you can't say run for your lives, but you also feel the need to specify because that's how dangerous it is.
Yeah, and having the wherewithal, the commitment of effort to say for your lives, like it's important enough that people know this is to stay alive, that I'm going to spend extra energy and time saying for your lives.
I'm going to get another
for your lives.
Yeah, run. For your lives. I'm going to get another hornet sting on my anus saying this. So he says, about 2 hours later, Gilbert and Lex had managed to locate all of our party, and things were not well. Our medic had been stung 7 times, and her previously quite pretty face now looked like John McCrurick, the Elephant Man. She was not the only one. All of us had been stung multiple times.
Man.
A quick side note, one of my stings had come out in the shape of a small dinosaur.
What? How's that even happen? I'm guessing, not like stood up.
Yeah. Like just. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get that.
Ugh. Anyway, we didn't have enough morphine for everyone, so it was decided that those who had been stung more than 3 times were allowed some morphine, and the rest of us would have to make an emergency camp. I had been stung 3 times. I was not eligible for morphine. For the next few hours, the less stung trekkers and I hacked down trees with our parangs to make a camp, all the while in agony from the stings. By contrast, those on morphine were having an amazing time, commenting on how pretty the trees were, having laughing fits, or just falling asleep and dribbling on themselves. The story so far is not meant as a self-congratulatory tale of heroism, but to give context for a terrible decision I made that night. Despite being completely exhausted, I struggled to sleep. My head was throbbing like a bowling ball on a bass speaker, and the adrenaline was still coursing through me. I had never been, and have never been since, so upset to realize that I needed a poo.
No thanks. You see, he's going to shit on a hornet nest, isn't he? He's going to poo right on top of a hornet nest. I know now. I know already.
Yeah, and the hornet's going to go, "How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man?" Like from SpongeBob. When setting up camp, I had dug a long drop in a small clearing nearby. All evening, those not on morphine, and thus not constipated, had been using it. The combination of nausea from the stings and prime-grade Malaysian corned beef that we'd had for dinner meant...
obsessed. Yeah. They're obsessed with corned beef.
Why? Just from the war?
I don't know. I never had it. I never had any myself, but like my friends when I was a kid, for like lunch, their packed lunch would be corned beef sandwiches.
Yeah, that's it. Classic. That's empire food.
I've been reading a book about this lady who was in pre-war Borneo, and she talks about a tin of bully beef. All they ever had was bully beef, which sounds nice, and I looked it up, it's disgusting.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like tinned beef. Like tinned beef paste.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely awful and revolting. The historian James Holland decided to make a sort of little British, like World War II rations biscuit thing. Like you would get, like, yeah, bully beef and these kind of hard tack biscuits and whatever. Like a kind of Normandy campaign era rations pack.
Mm.
And to make it like palatable, they knew from like soldiers' diaries what you had to do. You had to boil this and boil that and mix this and mix that. And he followed all the directions and he tried it. And he said it was like eating vomit. He said it was still the worst thing in the world. Just disgusting.
I know, man.
So he says, the combination of nausea from the stings and prime grade Malaysian corned beef we had for dinner meant that this particular long drop was less of a loo and more of a swirling cauldron of evil.
evil spirits coming out of everyone's ass. Whoa!
Just the ghosts of all the cows. Moo! In my state of profound discomfort and exhaustion, I remembered where the loo was, but I forgot about the state of it, which is why I decided to go shoeless.
That's the sound of one of the cow ghosts.
I would never go shoeless in the fucking rainforest.
Yeah, especially after that day, after the prime event of that day, which was stepping in a hornet's nest, I'd be extra vigilant about shoes.
I would sleep in my shoes.
Mm-hmm. I sleep in a big shoe.
Yeah. There was a young Phil who lived in a shoe.
Mm-hmm. And it was lovely.
Yeah, and he didn't get stung. He says, I donned my head torch and I shuffled off into the night. Mosquitoes and midges filled the air around my face and blurred my vision, causing me to stumble into trees and bushes. As I wandered on, I became increasingly concerned. I couldn't see the long drop or recognize the clearing. Then, the stench. Aha, I thought, I must be near. Just as I finished that thought, I felt my foot sink into the earth.
No.
I had just walked, literally, into the loo.
What about the drop? Isn't it a big, like, a big trench?
Well, he said he dug it himself. I mean, digging a single trench in an open field takes, you know, 8 men all day. So one dude in the jungle full of roots, this thing was, what, a foot deep, maybe 2?
So a short drop, a very short drop.
Yeah, short enough that he didn't die, I guess, by falling in. As I dredged my foot out of the foul, wet sludge, my initial concerns were gangrene and rot, as my feet were bloodied and cracked from many a day's trekking.
I hate this story.
But I rallied, calling the loo a bastard, and set to the matter at hand. I squatted over the hole, and I looked down. An enormous centipede was on my shit-covered foot.
I hate the jungle. I hate the jungle. We shouldn't be there. We shouldn't be there. Our species should not be in there anymore.
Keep out of it. Let them get on with it.
Jeez. This is why people in the UK don't appreciate just how amazing it is to walk, to just be able to walk in the forest here, or just to walk in a field and worry about dying or catching something deadly or being stung with like one of the Guinness World Records 50 worst pains possible or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the UK's wildlife is like the wildlife you'd let on a space station. It's so managed.
British wildlife is in like children's books.
Yeah.
And Malaysian wildlife is in military manuals. I think it says very much about the animal, which book it's in.
Yeah. Also, like the Malaysian jungle or the Borneo jungle is, I think, just where they send the SAS.
What, for training?
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Who's the, what's the weird kingdom on Borneo that's on its own? Brunei?
Brunei, yeah.
Yeah, they go. The SAS are sent, I think, to the jungle part of their training is in the in Brunei, under the Sultan of Brunei. They have a whole relationship.
Yeah.
But it says something when your countryside is where we send the SAS to get rid of the weakest members.
Yeah.
That's you know.
It's amazing how gentle the people are. You know, Borneo, people in Borneo are very gentle, even though, you know, their immediate surroundings are like a level of hell, one of the levels of hell.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why they just go, well, I wouldn't. They can see that how horrible it would be to be like a jungle hornet. So they go, well, I won't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe it keeps them humble. Maybe that's why some people in the UK are so rude, because they're like, there's nothing in 100 miles I can't kill with my hands.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Maybe that's it. So where are we? Matt is squatting over the hole. His foot is covered in shit. He's decided to keep shitting anyway in the dark. And he looks, and there's an enormous centipede on his shit-covered foot, causing me to recoil, he says. That very shit-covered foot slipped, and I fell bum-first into the loo.
And the centipede went up his anus. I just know it. A scorpion went up his penis.
Yep. I hauled myself up from the puddle of torrid cack and saw that my ass cheeks now resembled the ends of two large eclairs dipped in chocolate. At this point, I realized I had forgotten the toilet paper, and I gently started to cry.
I don't blame him. I would have started crying the second I stepped foot in the jungle, even before any of the bees happened. I would have just been like...
You would have been like the omen for everyone else in the group.
What's that?
Like, you would have been the omen that the trip's going to go wrong. Like, oh, our native friend, is it just... No, and they're like, oh, what? He seems to know something about the jungle that we don't. Perhaps it's horrible.
So horrible.
Yes, okay. So he says, he starts to cry. It took all of my mental resilience to summon the strength to waddle to my rucksack to get my loo roll, desperately not trying to spread liquid shit everywhere, and waddle back to the long drop and do the best of form of clear up that I could. I went back to bed, cold, tired, and stinking. But in the morning, I'd find somewhere to wash and get the medic to look at my foot. For now, after a long and deeply traumatic day, I could sleep. It was around 5 minutes later that I realized I hadn't even done my own shit.
Oh, man. Your body put it aside because it had so much more to deal with.
Yeah, in emergency mode, your body went, we'll do this later.
Oh, my God.
Imagine that. So, so he said, I hadn't even done my own shit. I'm not ashamed to say that I started to cry again. With one final effort, I dragged myself out of bed, and back I went, only this time with sandals.
Okay, well... Too little too late, but better than nothing.
Do you know what I like to think, Phil?
Mm.
I like to think that that same orangutan from the first story was just watching him.
I was hoping he would swing down and like swing down with a roll of toilet paper like that, and then just hand it over to Matt, and then just give him a wink, and then swing away.
If it was two types of movie, there's one type of movie where that happens. Although I'd like to imagine that the orangutan would swing down, hand him the loo roll, and then go like, and shake his head at him like, God's sake, and then swing away. Because from the orangutan's point of view, this guy's just got up and gone whoa, and not put any shoes on, and then just like run into a toilet, splashed poo everywhere, seen a centipede and gone whoa, instead of eating it, and then just fallen in the poo again,
and then gone
run back, and then run back again, and then run back, and then run back again. The orangutan would just be like, God, I've got to step in here. Or in a sort of horror movie version, like after the end of all of that, the camera pans up to the tree above his hammock and the same orangutan's there just watching him, still just furious that this guy keeps shitting where he is. Ominous music plays. Matt says, keep up the good work and thank you from the bottom of my heart for keeping us entertained during lockdown. Thank you. Prayers redacted. Very nice. Thank you, Matt. Lots of love to you both. Matt the Splat. God,
The Splat lives up to his name once again. Splatting all over the world.
There's something about the idea of being that dirty and in pain in 90 to 100% humidity.
It's such an unpleasant, uncomfortable climate, and to go out into the jungle in it and then get stung by a wasp and then fall in shit and then get a centipede on your
And then the fact that, like, not only is it that hot and that sweaty and there's all these other issues, but that you're just kind of always being bitten forever.
Yeah.
Little things are biting you forever. You don't get, like, they can vary in size, but at the best case scenario is that the thing that bites you is small.
Unless it's a horsefly, then the bite is like enormous. I mean, I was getting bitten all the time there, just all the time. If I wanted to play PlayStation on the outside veranda there, I'd have to light a fucking mosquito coil, so I was just breathing in like mosquito repellent fumes as I played Metal Gear Solid or whatever. Because otherwise, I just get bitten all night.
Yeah. Yeah,
go to bed. Mosquito coils are quite cool.
Do you know why a horsefly's bite is so bad?
No. Do they leave like a bit of their teeth in there or something?
No, it doesn't use a proboscis. It has two big, like, praying mantis style sword arms that it just hacks away at you and then drinks from the wound.
Ugh.
It doesn't actually sting, it kind of slashes.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's like the bad guy from Halloween or whatever. Just was it Jason? What's his name?
Oh, with the mask.
Yeah, the bug equivalent.
Bug Jason.
Bug Jason, yeah.
And we'll do one final. One final little email from Ben.
Ben, here we are as men. Again.
He says, hi, Pierre and Feckhill.
Feckhill.
Yeah, F-E-C-H-I-L. He's written it. F-E-C-H-I-L.
Oh, like fecal.
Oh. Hi, Pierre and Fecal. Oh, yes. Okay, very good. From Tokyo, Japan.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't know. Have we had Japanese correspondents before?
I think we might have had one or someone who was there for a bit, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. He says, I have to admit, I was a later plopter. Very nice.
I like a later plopter. That's very good.
having only discovered your show at episode 57. However, I was so enamoured with it that I leapt headfirst into the stinky mudslide and have diligently caught up with 50-odd hours of piping hot chat that you've curled out onto your podcast platform. Thank you. Thank you.
Very good.
Recently, he says, I have tried suggesting it to a few friends, but as with any unsolicited hilarious podcast recommendation, it seems to have fallen on deaf ears.
Yeah, I think people are sick to the teeth of recommendations.
Someone even suggested he would purposely never listen just out of principle.
I get it, I understand. I felt the same way.
I feel guilty I may have inadvertently lost you a potential pod bud through my naive proselytizing. Perhaps a shout out to Josh, living his best bum life in Sweden, would persuade him to join in the frivolity, his narcissism likely outweighing his spitefulness.
Well, I mean, in order for him to hear the shout out, he needs to listen to the podcast. So I don't know how he's...
True.
Unless he's going to... Right, so if he finds out he's been mentioned on it, then he might...
Yeah, an excited Ben.
Well, he has
Ben.
Now.
Yeah, he has an now. Excited Ben sends him a clip or something. Warmly jacking yes. it, Ben. Thank you for proselytizing anyway, though, Ben. And indeed, it's been tens of episodes since we've said it. But do subscribe on iTunes and rate us 5 stars.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I forgot about those heady days of inviting the 5 stars. Please, yes, do give us 5 stars regardless of how good you think this is. We don't care.
It's an uber 5 stars. You had a podcast and you listened to it and it happened.
It happened. The truth matters, but not in this one case. This one case, just give us 5 stars.
And subscribe.
Yes, and subscribe. I do. And I have.
Yep,
and if
too.
I can find time in my busy day to subscribe to our podcast and give us 5 stars, then I think you can too. All right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So do that. And we don't mind too much if after that you just, the second it beams into your phone, you delete it in fury. The point is,
and
the subscription
button. Throw your phone in a river. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Do it. Yeah, whatever. But yes, that's it. Thank you, Matt. The Splat, and thank you, Ben. And see you guys. Next week it'll be just the day, like the day before lockdown ends in England, or on the day.
Yeah, and we move into like some identical tier, you know. But
it's back to tiers again.
I wonder what I don't know where I've not even kept up. I don't know where London's at now. Numbers-wise.
I think there's rising cases, but I mean, I don't know. They'll just make it up as they go along anyway.
Another vaccine. I wonder what the vaccine will be next episode. What the new vaccine will be next episode. Disney?
Yes,
maybe Disney will have a vaccine next episode, or...
Yeah, the Mickey Mouse vaccine, that'll be good.
imagine you're under the microscope. You look at someone who's been inoculated with the Mickey Mouse vaccine, just... Ooh, it's just like all these little Mickey Mouse heads going and just attacking antigens.
It's shaped like 3 circles, where it's like one's the head and 2 are the ears. Woohoo! Woohoo! Just that noise as they eat a coronavirus. Woohoo!
Of course, the crucial part of this vaccine is what's called the ear protein. Ear protein right.
Yeah, it uses both of the ear circles to surround the virus and smush it between the ears.
What register is Mickey Mouse at? Oh, oh, oh. Why are
Very
you,
high.
Why? I'm a tenor. How are you reaching higher pitches than I am? Oh, I have to go into like falsetto then. It doesn't work.
I can do very high-pitched noises. I just can't do them in tune.
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's like counter tenor range where you're at.
Is it?
It's pretty high.
Oh, cool! I didn't know that. You have to like kind of I kind of jink my jaw down a little bit and shut the top of my throat.
Huh? I said, "What did you call me?" When you said jink, it's just a little joke.
Yeah, just push my jaw down and kind of shut the top of my throat and go.
Oh, sure thing. No, I can't. I can do it. I can do it. I'm all closed up.
The new vaccine from Oxford is very good. It doesn't have to be stored at fucking Fortress of Solitude temperatures, and it costs like £2.
That's the thing. That, yeah, it's like people. Yeah, it's actually the best one, isn't it? It's the best one by far because it doesn't have to be stored in ice, in a single block of ice, and
like a villain.
Is it literally like £2?
Yeah, it's like fucking £2 or something ridiculous. All the other ones are like £15 or £20, and they have to be at -70, and the Queen has to give them with her mouth, you know. Whereas this one, it's an absolute discount pint of beer. This thing,
amazing. Really good stuff. Really good stuff from some university. I've forgotten which one, but it's not important. What matters is that it works.
It's true. All right. Well,
you know, they found that it gets to 90% effectiveness if the first dose is half a dose, and then the second dose is a full dose.
Yeah.
They found that out by accident. They'd accidentally given a bunch of people half a dose the first time round.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And then just continued, but then thought, oh, let's see how this turns out, and it's for some reason gives you a better result.
The guy was just saying, like, we think maybe it's because it's more like how you'd meet a virus, like, in the wild. Like, you wouldn't get a big dose directly into your bloodstream. You'd get, like, a little. Maybe it gives your body time or something. But it's funny that even at this level, with this amount of urgency, they're just like, yeah, it's probably because of this. But then again, we've made that up.
Yeah. Anyway, see y'all next week.
Yep, see you guys next week. Subscribe and rate us 5 stars and stay alive.
Stay alive until at least 95.
That's right. Okay, cheers, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.